Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Gnostic Media's Unspun, episode number 101. Happy to be back today with Dr.
Ladies and
Hans
gentlemen,
oh. Welcome back. Did it again. I forgot to pause the audio on my dang browser. I got to stop doing that. Too many things to remember when we start the show. Thanks, everybody who donated this week. Thanks to Teresa, who mailed a donation. I appreciate that. And thanks to everybody else who donated via the website, etc. Hans, you were sick as a dog by the end of the last episode that you were on, episode 99. You were just about to keel over by the last few minutes of the episode. How did that go for you?
It wasn't too pleasant, but I survived. I'm back among the living, so I'm pretty healthy right now. It's good.
Yeah, I'm feeling great, and it was a good cold. You know, they got us good with that one.
Chemtrail flu, perhaps.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, chemtrail flu or something. I got my fresh, warm thing, Contigo of buttered coffee. And delicious, freshly roasted. I roasted it myself. Delicious, you know. But So we have a lot to dig into, and this time, you know, what we're going to do to make it easier is you're going to share your screen and we're going to do a little slideshow, and then I'm going to have you in a box talking, and I probably will be invisible for most of this while you talk, and then whenever you want me to jump in, you're going to have to unshare your screen or we'll toggle it somehow.
Yeah, well, it's a very large topic and there's so many possible entrees into it. If I had 7 or 8 hours, I could probably really clarify it. But given the duration of the broadcast, I thought it would be expedient to just come up with a PowerPoint. Also helps keep myself on focus. And I'd like to tell the listeners, I am actually finishing up a special CD of music for listeners to Gnostic Media. So for a $10 donation, you get a unique CD. It will be limited pressing, and I'll send it out to you. Just shoot me an email through the website. So I actually was working on that today, because one of the things that I've come to terms with is that the technologies that are used against us are also some of the most beneficial technologies to use for our own benefit, right? But let me just go ahead and dive in here, since we're, you know, I'll try to stay on task. And Jan, welcome to, jump in. And now, of course, the toolbar has disappeared and share screen. All right. So high tech. So here we go.
All right.
Okay.
Looks good. And I'm going to, so my little box is going to disappear and then they're going to be able to see you there. So that should be working right. And you know, parts of the corner there might be cut off. I'll try to size it so you're good. But there you go. You're all set.
All right. Excellent. Yeah. So I'm just kind of continuing with the topic I started out with before.
Oh, you know what? Really quick, Hans. What is your email address? The audience is asking.
Oh, hansutter@hotmail.com.
There you go. hansutter@hotmail.com. All right.
Yes. Certainly appreciate it. It's interesting times that I've been experiencing. I'm not out there on the street protesting or anything like that, but certainly I've had some pretty strange things happen to me, because I guess sometimes, you know, if you're on the right track, you get a little bit of a blowback. So anyway, so today, And so what I wanted to do was try to give a little bit more specificity, some more concretization of what I've been talking about. And, you know, like I said, this is kind of a vast topic. It's very interconnected, and it's important to realize that all of these elements, you know, fuse together. So it's not a single thing. You know, we're looking at many, many different components. However, it's very possible to kind of, narrow it down. So let's go ahead and go to the next slide. Okay. So, you know, I used the term mass music because I didn't want to imply that what we call music itself is to blame or is at fault. But with mass music / mass culture, you know, we have described as sort of an inorganic entity or something that it's being built from the normal ground where culture would arise, right? So if you have various movements, we could look at, say, the Romantic movement in poetry, you can look at the Baroque era, you can look at, you know, Greco-Roman art or culture, you can look at whatever. And these are arising to a certain extent organically out of a given culture. And in fact, at least for Heidegger and also Nietzsche, in a certain way that art or the expression of art is really kind of the highest points a human being can reach in art, not just defined as, you know, writing a poem or throwing some paint on a canvas like Jackson Pollock, you know, just getting drunk and throwing paint around and selling it for $50 million. Hey, that works for me. You know, I'll do that in my garage. But we're talking about art itself as this expression of yourself within the context of the world, and art is, you know, pretty much the art of speaking, the art of almost anything. But mass music, mass culture. So we have not only the ground of the art or the music is no longer coming organically out of the entire relational aspect, the entire social, cultural, natural order, but it's being superimposed. But at the same time, the next point is that it's manipulating traditional / historical thresholds. So what do I mean by that? I mean that you have certain components, right? You have the idea of your sense of time. You have different stages in your life between teenage to adolescence. You have ceremonies like marriage. You have all these different things which serve, you know, a much more powerful function than just your individual experience of it, right? By, say, for example, a graduation ceremony, you know, you're taking part in something that's happened to millions and millions of other people, right? And that's a crossing of a threshold. And that is something that represents a transformation of yourself, which I'll talk about a bit later. But also the traditional boundaries of society, what you can do, what you can't do, these are things, this is why we have a civilization, right? If there were none of these boundaries, the psychotic caveman Bob would have just murdered everybody and eaten them, and then we would have been extinct, right? So that's why there's certain mores and certain things like that. And these are systematized, but at the same time, it gives you a connection to a much wider field of history, right? So you're not just, for example, you live on a family farm, you say this goes back 10 generations. So you're part of that lineage. You're part of that. And in a certain sense, it makes you larger than yourself, right? But also reaffirms your individuality. Archetypal manipulation. This is very interesting. I'm going to talk about Easy Rider, that wonderful film, and how that works on the level of talking about archetypes. In this case, I'll just look at one archetype, which is that of the heroic journey, the hero, right? So we see that the hero, the quote-unquote alpha male, or maybe the alpha female, or the alpha transgender, who knows at this point. But basically...
I don't think that's possible.
That would be pretty ugly. Sorry if any trans people out there. I'm not transphobic, but, whatever. You know, that's...
Is that the latest term that they, you know, attack people with, transphobic?
Transphobic. Yeah, man, it's a big thing. I mean, you can get sued for being transphobic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways,
you have to ignore nature and then you get labeled. But you can't. They create labels, but you can't use pronouns anymore, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, there's lots of pronouns. I should come up with my own pronoun.
Sue anybody who doesn't use it correctly, you know.
I can make a lot of money. That's a great idea. That is a great idea on my own gender. And it's like Prince, you know, he got sued by all his record company. He just changed his name to this weird symbol, which you can't do anymore because he did it, but that was a great idea. So I'll just, my gender is like this unpronounceable, you know, weird symbol. And then, hey, you didn't call me by my name. And sorry, I'm suing you for like, you know, a couple hundred grand. So anyways, so back on topic. So archetypal manipulation. So archetypes are things that, you know, Carl Jung talks about the collective unconscious, but these are resonant symbols, right? These are, but they're not just symbols. These are sort of, you know, higher potentialities. These are, you know, repositories of, you know, of potential actions and ways of surmounting things and ways of, you know, achieving greatness and things like that. But the archetype also has sort of very resonant, almost foundational type of energy within, you know, the human consciousness. And so these are manipulated. Sigil magic, which is quite interesting, which I won't get into today, but this is something that sigils, if you're familiar with like the Lesser Key of Solomon by Mr. John Dee, or I think he was a doctor, Dr. John Dee, you know, with the Queen Elizabeth. So sigils are used in occult rituals and ceremonies. These are...
He was the spy master for the Queen.
Yeah, we have all this, of course, intelligence community slash occult stuff all kind of tied together from the very beginning. But sigils are kind of strange looking diagrams, usually with lines and curves, but they're supposed to represent sort of like a porthole for a type of energy. Generally speaking, sigils are used in, we describe as black magic, but they do have an effect on the human consciousness. Now, whether or not you want to see, you know, like I said, I won't have time to get into that in detail. You want to see that the use of these arcane type of symbolism, which is embedded in so much of our media and our culture, are those really portholes for a type of demonic energies, or are these sort of symbolic, tools to manipulate the consciousness? That you know, that depends. But anyway, sigil is another part of this. And the name of this slide, going back to that initiation, these are ways we're involuntarily, also obviously semi-voluntarily or sometimes wholly voluntarily initiated into this process that's become our culture. Okay, the next aspect is language manipulation of words and meanings, the manipulation and the use of shutdown terms, which is, of course, a huge part of political correctness. But there's a lot of this where language, the meaning of language is manipulated. But the fact is that language itself, if you see something is wrong and you want, even if you want to speak out about it, A, you could be shut down, but B, you may not even have an expressive terminology even to talk about it. And there's a whole range of elements that go on with language manipulation. But a big part of it is the fact that, you know, when you have a word and a representation or a form, like in Sanskrit, they say nama, rupa, name and form, with the mass media, the entire artificial simulacrum of what we're perceiving and taking to be reality from childhood is actually transforming how we can apply even a basic term like water and all that would imply, right? So if you talk about water, this is not vodka, this is water, but we look at, you know, even these terms become manipulated. And, you know, a great example is, Homeland Security, or, you know, all these things, the Clear Skies Initiative, et cetera, et cetera. But this is a major field of discourse and shutdown. And then finally, what this results in is collective reality engineering, which is extremely fascinating. And you look at this, the research done on this, and then how it sort of just disappeared, kind of like NLP. And I may, you know, if I'm back on here, I'll talk more about NLP. But the fact is that there is a certain extent where the reality we experience can be changed, or our placement within that can be changed by manipulating the overall sort of spectrum of consciousness. A great example on a small scale would be like a cult, where everybody in a cult sort of steps into this group reality. But the engineering of this on a large scale with things like hyper game theory and stuff like that, with all these other elements, is quite powerful. I don't know if you want to chime in there, Yam, but I'll just go ahead and move on here.
Just following along here. Let me resize this so the audience can see the first one. Go ahead.
Okay. So the process of initiation, how does this happen? And very briefly, initiation described as, you know, part of the ritual process which is a three-stage process, which is separation, initiation, and return, which is a basic element in, you know, human society, human narrative, religion, et cetera, for millennia. Initiation means that you're separated from your normal day-to-day life. You know, you go on your adventure, you go through some kind of a process, and then you have a reintegration or a return, but you return as a different person. For example, a classic initiation, you know, and I forget the name of the tribe, African tribe, you go out and you have to live in this hut in the middle of the desert. If you survive and come back, then you're now a man and you have a completely new role in the society. But first you're physically separated from the community. You go through a type of process and you're brought back. Obviously we're not looking at that on the same scale, but this is the basic mechanism that's employed here. So one of the basis of this is Lacan's inner mirroring, which, you know, describes this inner mirror, which is something where, say, for example, a parent or something like that, you have this reflection of the outside as an identification of yourself. So it's almost like a mirror inside of your own mind where you're sort of seeing yourself reflected through what you're seeing outside. And that stage is supposed to end in childhood, at least by adolescence. And part of the culture, actually, of this whole process is to prevent that ability or that transformation to go beyond this mirroring stage. But the big part of the pop music or the pop culture is that the listener or the viewer identifies with the singer, identifies with an actor, identifies with a character, and sees themselves as subconsciously participating or performing those actions, right? So that in a sense, they almost become that figure. You hear a song, the singer, you become that. In you know, again, the mirroring stage, this is described as a subconscious. I mean, yes, you can become aware of it, but generally speaking, you're probably not going to be aware of it, but you could see it by people mimicking their idols. They start mimicking the pop stars. They start taking on the language and things like that. But this is that process, you know, of this inner mirror where you're sort of defining yourself as this through this outer reflection. This is a gradual process. It's what I mean is that this goes in stages. And so as you get led down this sort of initiatory threshold, it takes place, gradualism, you know, the classic boiling frog, right? You don't even really know what's happening to you. You know, you start out, you know, you're drinking Coca-Cola, eating donuts. And then, you know, 2 years later, you're smoking crack, you know, driving at 150 miles an hour. You know, but that's obviously, that's supposed to be funny, but the fact is that these things go stage by stage. And just examples, Miley Cyrus, you know, she was on the TV show. And by the way, I know her first cousin, who's from Texas. Pretty interesting. I know a lot of kind of backstory about Miley, but she was actually kind of rebellious in the show, but she was still the good, you know, good natured girl. Obviously, you know, we can see her now and what she's become, but those people who have identified with her and are mirroring her, whether externally, subconsciously, or both, are led down this path. But it is voluntary, right? So with all types of these occult processes or these things, there's usually going to be something in yourself that's going to rebel, that's going to want to push back on it. And then we have group conformity, which will, generally speaking, override those impulses. But there is an element of voluntariness, right? It's not like this is distinct from, say, you know, you're locked in a basement and, you know, you're like, you know, Clockwork Orange, your eyes are propped open and you have to watch these images. You choose to turn it on. You know, you can choose not to participate. And now why this works, media and images are taken as reality by children, right? So when you start from the level of childhood, this stuff, and probably all of us or most of us, you know, we're sat down in front of the TV. You know, we watched television, we had toys, we had children's books, we had all this stuff. And, you know, there's this element of trust where, especially say European culture, you think, okay, we have a goodwill towards others. We assume that somebody writing a children's book is not embedding all kinds of, you know, dark elements that are going to really permanently mess with the psychology of our children. Now it's much more obvious, right? We see it in the you know, four dimensions, hyperspeed. It's right now, you know, this is extremely obvious. I think you can't miss it unless, you know, unless you're Hillary Clinton or something. But what's extremely fascinating, which I would love to go in more detail, but I'll just give kind of a cursory overview here, is that we can trace these symbolic initiations over generations. So we can look at some of the symbolism that will show up in some of these images and some of these, again, complexes. These are not just a single element. These are, you know, interactive scenarios. These are linguistic scenarios. These are identification, you know, how the person is identified. There's, you know, and then you have elements like the music, for example, is like a key or a trigger point, and then the sigils and all that stuff is all working together. It's all this multi-layer stuff that's happening. But this stuff will show up cross-generationally, so that stuff that you were exposed to as a child will reappear later and reappear later in a different form, which shows that this stuff is sort of occurring over time. I just wanted to give some clips. I don't know how old everyone's here. These are some TV shows, some kid shows from the 80s. And I just want to please are brief clips. I don't think you're going to get shut down for these things. These are all public domain and these are kind of forgotten. But I just want to play some clips from children's television shows and just want everyone to just be aware and notice this. It should just take a minute or two here.
So sure.
Go ahead. I probably need to change my share. Is that showing up or no?
No, it put your PowerPoint back and it took it out of full screen mode.
Okay, let me just go here, and it's actually showing up. Okay, I'm just going to stop share, and then see where. Okay, and then. So desktop. If I do desktop, I think I just do desktop. Oh, here we are. Okay, so this is a movie. We have The Wizard of Oz, and this is Return to Oz. I just want everyone to watch this. Okay, watch this clip, and then when we see stuff later, I think it'll be pretty resonant.
No audio coming through there. Are you sharing the audio? You forgot to share the audio, Hans.
Okay.
You have to share audio. When you share the screen, you have to share audio. There's a little button you have to click when you do it.
Okay, I got it. Okay.
You're still not playing the audio.
I'm sorry. It was. You had me type my password in. Hold on. You got it now?
No. When you shared the screen, there was a little thing to check to share the audio for that window, and you didn't check it. There it goes. Play it.
You got it now.
When you shared the screen, there was an option to do it. Yeah, you're still not playing the audio, so.
Okay.
Take it out of share screen, and this time when you share the screen, click the box that says share audio.
Yeah, I have it clicked. Share computer sound.
No, share, it's, well, yeah, maybe that'll work.
Okay. You got it?
No, nothing. There it goes. There you go. You got it.
Okay. Return to Oz. Nice little movie for 3-4-year-olds.
Dorothy Gale. What's happened to the scarecrow?
Come nearer to me. The gnome king took the scarecrow and all the emeralds back to his mountain and turned everyone else to stone. You will be rather attractive. One day. Not at all beautiful, you understand, but you'll have a certain prettiness. Different from my other heads. I believe I'll lock you in the tower for a few years till your head is ready. And then I'll take it.
I believe you will not!
Okay. And then going back to that, you know, imagine you are a kid that has identified with you're identified with the child. Here's another example. I think we're still going here.
Hey, wait, stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it. All right, there you go. Now whatever you did when you minimized it was cut off, but you got the volume way too high.
Okay, I'll try to crank that down.
Thanks.
Okay, here we go. All right.
Turn the volume down, Mark. Turn the volume down. You got it way too loud. No, there you go. Now you got it too quiet. It's got a ridiculous amount of bass. No, 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 not too much. Just a tiny bit. That's getting
Yeah, it's enough of that. But just to, again, I'll stop the share here. Yeah, I got one more. But I mean, just this is for, again, these are for very young children, right? These are not, as adults, we see this. Imagine what effect that's having on the, is this one more? Okay, is this going through?
No, you took it out of share screen.
Okay. Well, getting this going here, this, high-tech stuff. Okay, here we go.
Somebody says they weren't prepared to see that horror show.
Here we go.
Yep. Oh, I've seen this, I think. Yeah, you took the audio off, so you need to share the audio again.
Okay, it's the last. It says Sarah Computer Sound. I don't know why it's not showing it. I haven't checked.
But you changed something. You changed something last time and suddenly it kicked on. It's not playing at all.
It's not playing?
No.
Maybe it's quiet.
No, it's not playing.
Okay. Well, anyways, this is, people can watch that. That's Adventures of Mark Twain. That's a wonderful. These are for little kids, right? These are not, you got the PowerPoint, right? No.
No.
Okay.
You'll have to send it to me. Don't forget.
Yeah. Okay. So anyways, you know, again, this probably doesn't seem very shocking to us in our, you know, I'm sure maybe there's some 3 or 4 year olds watching this, but when you're a three or four year old child or a 2 or 3 year old child, a lot of this stuff can be incredibly traumatic, right? And so some of these things, for example, that Return to the Wizard of Oz, you know, if you know you're a child, especially a little girl, you're identifying with that lead character, you may repress the memory of that show, right? So this is going to create almost a dissociation through the terror that's being sort of inflicted in that. And the other thing is that with these processes, right, not only can they be suppressed, but the second one, Pogo, it's like a welcome to the world of psychedelic drugs with all kinds of other overlaid symbolism and things like that, right? And so a lot of this stuff, if you have a very good memory, you may be able to recall watching this, when you're a kid, et cetera, et cetera. But, basically this stuff fuses these symbols also with an element of terror or fear, which allows sort of is the initial stage of this programming. And you would think that you probably wouldn't want to traumatize children like that, but that's what's done. Jan, real quick, is my sound okay?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so there's a PA, education thesis, a Disney influence on kindergarten girls' body image. And this is about how you get, anorexic little girls in, kindergarten. But it's not even that. There's something called the somatic body image, right? It's so we can experience our bodies, but we actually have a representation of our bodies that's sort of inscribed in our mind, right? There's a mental representation of our bodies. And, for example, transgenderism, before it became like the new, sainthood, or the new, the new normal, the new Gandhi or whatever. Transgenderism is actually a disorder in that your body, what you see yourself is, in your mind, you have a distorted image of yourself that is not aligned with reality.
Yeah, that's cognitive dissonance, right? Yeah.
Well, it's much more extreme than that. I mean, how about the classic story, which happened recently, the girl that believed she was blind. So her psychotherapist assisted her in, pouring was some kind of chemical in her eyes, so she actually became blind. I mean, that is screwed up. How about there's a person, people say that, I think I'm an amputee even though I have an arm.
So I saw that, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Complete nonsense. I'm gonna find that. In fact, I posted it to Facebook recently. I'll find it and share that for everyone. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, but that's an extreme example. But the fact is, this we're talking about early childhood, right? Does start to distort your own sense of yourself. And, again, it's kind of hard to remember. If you go back to 3 or 4 years old, you might have seen something really terrifying. Well, that may indeed create a dissociative state where those images will be directly written upon your subconscious, and you're not really going to have conscious access to that anymore. Again, this is all, a relative continuum. So we have this mirroring of virtual worlds. So I talked about the inner mirror. In fact, now what we have are all of these mirrors sort of set up, these reflective spaces that are sort of, shooting these images back and forth, in the mass culture, as reflected in our social space, as internalized, even in our dreams, in our other areas, which creates, for example, you go to the gym, the TV's a great thing about America, right? You can never miss a TV. You go in bars, there's like 90, you go to a sports bar, there's like 400 TVs. Unless I'm like running a gambling empire or something, why would I want 400 TVs? But that's part of it, is that these images are constantly there, right? It constantly creates that state. So this is, again, part of the mass reality manipulation. So what we have is a mass MKUltra type of programming, using, stuff that was gained in all the experimentation in the 60s. What I talked about before, Dr. John Lilly's work on, programming, reprogramming, and metaprogramming the human biological computer. And again, it's obviously if you're kidnapped and, thrown into some kind of a house of horrors, you're going to have a whole different type of programming going. But this programming is being done on a mass scale, and it's going to have impacts to a greater or lesser degree on basically anybody unless they have you know, grew up on maybe if you grew up on Ruby Ridge and didn't get shot by the police, you may not have that. But that's an example, like Ruby Ridge, right? That's a great example of when you step outside the system, how violently they will react. And I might bring that up later. If people aren't familiar with that, they just an insane, egregious overstep of this guy, you know, wanted to get back to the land. And they just came out with, you know, SWAT teams and killed his wife and killed his you know, eight-year-old son because he wanted to live without any influence or impact from this mass media. And that shows how dangerous it is. Okay. So then we have occultic initiation practices, right? So these occult, which is becoming more and more and more obvious and in your face and just direct. And that's the one, I guess, advantage we have now is that, you know, you may have had to do a little more effort to, you know, pull that out of the stuff from the, you know, early 70s, 80s, that stuff I just played for you. But now it's just completely over the top in your face. But it is transgenerational in that they do, I think they look at generations and they repeat things, you know, at different stages, like adolescent, early childhood, you know, late childhood, adolescence, teenage years, young adulthood, et cetera. So I think this is definitely done, but at the same time, they repeat generations, right? They repeat the summer of love became this ecstasy, right? The ecstasy stuff in England, in the late 80s and all that stuff, that right. Was based on the 1960s, and this
and then Rolling Burning Man out and repeating the same thing over again when we're older again, so then they just follow it through.
Yeah, and but also why not just use it again? It worked already, so that shows to me at least is evidentiary that there is some kind of baseline infrastructure, superstructure, and then also you have the occult law of reversal, right? So you turn things upside down, you invert reality, you know the opposite. You know, you have this reverse, well, I don't know much about the reverse speech thing. It seems a little bit fishy to me, but the idea of just reversing things. And in fact, the dialectic is not the Hegelian dialectic. It's the Marxist dialectic, which is an inversion, a direct inversion of the Hegelian dialectic, which actually led society through to spirit, right? From all, it read basically to a transcendent absolute spirit.
Right. Well, you know, and there's you can figure this out also when you look at, you know, logos versus anti-logos. And then what they try to do is they try to birth the new man through. I'm going to pull up see if I have a symbol here to show it to basically birth a new man. And a friend of mine and I figured this out a few months back with and it's kind of a crappy image here, but I'm going to show it anyway. This image here. So what they're doing is you have logos, anti-logos, and then in the middle, they're birthing this new man, not through logos and truth, not through the antithesis, but through the center, and trying to birth the new human, the transhuman, the moderate, etc. through the center. So it's like, you know, the passages in the Bible where they're talking about not worshiping two masters, etc. That's exactly what that is. Revelation 3, what is it, 3:15-16 talks about, you know, very against the moderate when it talks about spewing lukewarm water, vomiting it out of your mouth. But this, and what I'm showing on the screen, you can't see it, Hans, but what I'm showing is a sigil that actually breaks down and exposes, like, you know, so much when you get what's in this thing. But you got to, you know, stare at it for a while. But you have thesis, antithesis, logos, anti-logos, masculine, feminine, and all of these different things. But then what they do is they've spun it, they've inverted everything. So logos is actually upside down and all of that. So it fits exactly with what you were saying.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Ed, that's absolutely right. So let me I'll go back here to my PowerPoint here. You know, I guess I have just too much material, man. I'm like,
sorry. We can just do a part three if you can't get through enough tonight. So just, you know, whatever.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Yeah, I can just talk really fast. Love that. Just talk super fast here. So I just, okay, I guess I was back at the beginning here. So anyway, so we go on from that. And I just, this is one of the, my pet peeves, man. It's not the Hegelian dialectic. The Marxist dialectic is a destruction. It does not build society up, but it's a continual process of tearing apart. Even if new layers are built, even if new forms are created after that destruction, those two are torn apart. And that's our culture right now. And Marx himself was a Satanist, so that satanic process. So calling it the Hegelian dialectic is absolutely untrue. Now, you may not believe in absolute mind, right? You may not believe that Hegel thought about this absolute spirit of, you know, this sort of transcendent realm. You could say that's not true, but Marx, it's a Marxist dialectic, which is that of destruction. So that's just, again, I don't know why David Icke said that, but it's wrong, but it is an inverted Hegelian dialectic, which is a satanic inversion. Okay, so I'll just read this real quick. This is an example of a ceremony of Isis. The acts or gestures that accompany the in, and how about Isis? Isis, the land of Isis was Syria. Ancient Syria was the land of Isis, and they call the rebels Isis, right? So the goddess Isis is very important, who's also a hermaphrodite, etc. But the acts or gestures that accompany the incantations constitute the rite of Isis. In these dances, the beating of the drums and the rhythm of music and repetitive movements were held by hallucinatory substances like hashish or mezcal. These were consumed as adjuvants to create the trance and the hallucinations that were taken to be the visitation of the god. The drugs were sacred and their knowledge was limited to the initiated, possibly because they have the illusion of satisfied desires and allowed the innermost feelings to escape. These rites acquired during their execution a frenzied character that is conspicuous in certain spells. Retreat. Sorry about the typo. He is piercing thy head, slashing thy face, dividing thy head, crushing it in his hands. Thy bones are shattered. Thy limbs are cut to pieces. So that's an example. It's exactly what was happening in the 1960s with the psychedelic dance and all that stuff. So people think they're being all free, and they are actually participating in these ancient rituals, which I would describe as a counter-civilizational thing. This is not a new thing. This has been around for many, many thousands of years, but basically now it has almost total ascendancy and control. I won't go through this whole thing. Adorno quote, which is pretty good. In an imaginary but psychologically emotion-laden domain, the listener who remembers a hit song will turn into the song's ideal subject, into the person for whom the song ideally speaks. At the same time, as one of many who identify with that fictitious subject, that musical I, he will feel his isolation ease as he himself feels integrated into the community of fans. In whistling such a song, he bows to a ritual of socialization, although beyond this unarticulated subjective stirring of the moment, his isolation continues unchanged. The comparison with addiction is inescapable. Addicted conduct generally has a social component. It is one possible reaction to the atomization, which, as sociologists have noticed, parallels the compression of the social network. Addiction to music on the part of a number of entertainment listeners would be a similar phenomena. Adorno's sociology of music. So that's absolutely correct, right? The listener identifies. So, for example, Britney Spears, you identify with that, and you're totally isolated. You're totally atomized. You're living in this imagistic, reflective mirror state where you can't even experience the real world. Yet all those other fans who are also in that state, well, now you're not alone anymore. Even how about someone who's a fanatic fan for a sports team? You may be totally isolated and just lost in your own inner world. But then when you go to the game, the football game, and there's all these other people, you get a sense of easing that isolation. But ultimately, it actually increases that isolation and increases the derealization and the removal from reality. Okay. And so the recycling of media. This is Hirsch, another guy from the Princeton Radio Project, you know, which we talked about. Pretty astute. The radio or mass media transformed the mass media into an agency of subcultural programming. So it's subcultural. It's programming. This is interesting. This is way before we have the, you know, subculture, counterculture. We're talking about it's programming below the threshold of the normal cultural stream, and yet it is also programming the subconscious, and eventually that will come out and become the mainstream culture. And so I find this to be, you know, quite fascinating here. And what I just want to do briefly is I've got a separate thing which just shows some images that I have a whole bunch of other ones, but that are some of the things that, you know, depending on your age, you know, if you just turn 25 like me, you may not. No, that would be great, right? So I'm going to show you some things here.
To be 25 now, but with the intelligence you have.
Yeah.
With all the wisdom that you gain when you know. Because, you know, you're about as dumb as a rock in your 20s, most of them anyway.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's certainly true. It's a high-tech world here. Okay, so here's my images. Share that. And it's not, you're seeing my other slideshow, right?
Yep.
Christ, okay. This is, it worked on the sound check here. I mean, it's not, PowerPoint's not letting me go back to it. Go view. Okay, slideshow. Okay, and I think I got it, guys. So, this is my. You can see I'm even using my mic. You know, I'm really sort of in the high tech zone here. So this is a book from the early 70s, a children's book, How to Make Magic. So just seeing how children's literature influences kids. So this is a book that was for kids, sixth grade. Five, six, seven, eight, 9 years old. How to Make Magic. Look at that wonderful little cover there. We see the candle, peacock feathers, the severed head, the goat's head, okay, the horseshoe, all kinds of stuff in there, right? Just move on from that book. It tells you how to make a magic wand, the hazel tree, which is hazel, paint the wand black, which should be white. So they're giving this to little kids, 5, 6, 7 years old, and telling them actual ritual occult magical practices. Here's one. This is a how-to series. Make your own magic wands. Learn how to do mind reading and fortune telling. How to weave spells. Brew magic potions. Summon spirits and hunt ghosts. So this is a children's book in the early 70s. And here's just another example from that book. Abracadabra is probably the most famous of all spells. But to cast the spell properly, you must write it out in the form of a triangle up on a point as shown in the diagram. You could write it out on 5 sheets of thickest paper. So this is actual. This is not like, let's, pull a rabbit out of the hat. This is actual, Kabbalistic, John Dee, black magic shit for the kids, or stuff for the kids to do. Okay, spells also have sentimental moments. Keep a faithful friend is to dig up the earth from their footprint, put it in a pot, and then sow some marigolds in it. And you can make charms with secret symbols. So this is actually showing, this is initiating kids into actually doing occult ritual practices and actual, black magic stuff. Not just, this is stuff, you believe it or not. I mean, this is the stuff they would be doing. Let's move on here. You guys are familiar with the Garbage Pail Kids, which came out in the
80s. Wow, that's right. Look at that.
And these are little collectible cards. Now, think of the effect that this is having on the subconscious mind of the child. And all of these kids, and all that they did, they even had their TV show. And there was also description, and people would change them. Well, I'll just go through this. So Plucky Chucky, is the serial killer, whatever. And we got Handy Randy, who's sticking his head through the bottom, through his brain and the bottom.
You mean his hands, yeah.
His hands. I mean, his hands through his heads. And his fingers are becoming his teeth. Okay? How about Fry and Brian? 176761. That's, he's, being electrocuted. And we've got Barf and Bart. Couple eyes there, Illuminati eyes. Okay, and his finger. I mean, so it's pretty disturbing. And again, this is for, little kids. And these are modern examples of YouTube videos for little kids, like little infants or for, toddlers or kids in first, second grade. This is a little teddy bear getting his Johnson removed surgically. Here's one with the little babies with giant cockroaches crawling on them. And again, these are for little kids. These are the demographic, 4 to 8 years old. This is a Swedish
Wow.
Yeah. It's a little Swedish magazine. And this is, again, we were going from contemporary to older examples. Here's another, this is from another children's YouTube channel. Look at that. If you're a toddler and you see that, what is that going to do to you? You could have, I mean, that's a, just for me, I mean, I'm traumatized, man. I mean, just seeing that. I mean.
Yeah, you know. that's just sick.
Okay.
Hey, that's the scariest one of all, man. Look at that.
Well, NSYNC, in this example, I mentioned this. Yeah. So we mentioned that this example of the NSYNC, and this is NSYNC when they're, you know, they're just out there for the kids. I mean, that's, and we could pull that stuff apart. There's all kinds of other symbolism with the hand gestures. If you look at it closely, it's a lot more disturbing. There's all this subliminal stuff that goes on in these images, and some of them you can just study for hours. But we go on here. Okay, we got this new Canadian pop singer, again, who's going for that tween market. So this is her little image. So we got the red threads, the, you know, the mind control, all that stuff. And then go back to the children that grew up watching Return to the Wizard of Oz. And then you've got your pop idol, right? So you notice that similar symbolism, as well as, you know, we could go on for hours about the MKUltra stuff. Another image of her. Look at that. You know, the tattoos. She's bound, you know, bondage. She's obviously a mind-controlled slave, but she is the ultimate, you know, idol. Like if you're a, you know, a teenage girl.
Ironically titled Rogue at the top, right? You know, like she's rogue when she's totally mind-controlled. Thanks for the donations, you two. I appreciate that.
And it's, so this is, I think this is Britney Spears' video or something like that, where, you know, she's going into the threshold, initiatory threshold. And again, this is resonating with, again, the inner mirror, the childhood identification. And also when you have these very traumatic images, it's, you know, it's going to be, it can be repressed in the memory. So here we have, and I may have the wrong artist, but so now she's become the female pop singer is now this, you know, this mental patient with purple hair. And then she smashes the mirror and all these monarch butterflies fly out of the mirror. So when she breaks free, she actually goes into the conditioning. David Bowie, The Man Who Fell to Earth, photo from that. Here's Justin Timberlake. So this is where he's supposedly combating the Illuminati, but notice he becomes a transhuman in this video. And you can see all of this stuff. I mean, just ranges of symbolism. You know, just look at the Rothschilds. You've seen that probably the pictures of that party at their house where they have all these weird type of things like this. And now this is being promoted for our
That was that you're talking about that Kubrick film Eyes Wide Shut with.
No, I'm talking about the actual photographs from a party at the Rothschilds' house.
Okay.
With Salvador Dali did the art, and it's extremely disturbing and very similar to these music video clips. And this is an earlier music video, Laura Branigan, Control, from the 1980s. If anyone remembers that, so this is another example of this other entity entering into her consciousness, going into the mind control type of party with, and the thing is called self-control, but this is like this demonic entity or other that's coming into her. And here's another clip from the video where she's at this kind of Eyes Wide Shut type party where all these other, you know, mind controlled entities, whatever. And then there's another. And then finally, she's completely dissociated one way and her mind is now fractured in these, and then these other dissociated entities, which, you know, indicates the fracture of the personality. And this is a nice, you know, pop song music video that people probably didn't even notice when they watched it as they were programmed by it. And we have Eminem, just a nice little friendly thing. That's obviously a younger Eminem. That just shows that he likes the Chicago Bulls, right? That's not a satanic symbol there. And then that's the second part. I'll have to go into that later. I guess I can just kind of blast through this if hopefully I'm not going too fast here, but I took the time to do the PowerPoint. Let me just blast through you on a list. Maybe if you don't mind, maybe go a few minutes over if you want to.
Oh, that's all right, dude. You know.
Okay. I mean. Okay. Yeah. Why don't you? You want to comment on anything I've said so far?
Yeah. I mean, it's disturbing. You know, it's like just more of just new layers of what we've been seeing, and we're starting to see even more layers appearing, you know.
Yeah. And one thing what I'm trying to get at fundamentally is that, you know, I started out talking about the Muzak and all this other stuff, and that's where I initially started going into this, wondering why they're recycling all this cultural stuff. And so, you know, and this is something, again, that it depends on your upbringing. And that's one of the reasons that people actually say they come to the United States with an intact cultural identity, even if they're, you know, Somalians running white slavery rings just down the street from my house right here in Columbus, Ohio. But they have a cultural identity that they haven't been exposed to all this stuff. So they have much stronger ties with kinship and family relations, as well as just stronger, you know, the stronger personalities, because they're not internally fractured or even don't even have all these things. Because I look at this as like, these are little things that are floating around, I think, in most people's minds. What the extent to which they're active just, you know, depends. But anyways, I'll get into that later. But let me just look at Easy Rider, an example again of this use of this mass cultural programming, and how this film, again, is intersecting. We've all, you know, talked a ton about, and Jan, this is obviously an area of expertise, and we've done, you know, countless hours on this, the whole 60s.
You know, and I got to just say thanks to everybody who's donating all of a sudden for the show right now. I really appreciate everyone. There was like four or five people that just donated all at once. So thanks, Zero, Masumink, I Belong in the Kitchen, Lex Van, and Opus for that. I appreciate it. Sorry, Hans, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just thought that was important to thank them.
Oh, yeah, no, that's great, Jan. And yeah, not to get out the begging cup, but I certainly, Hans, yes. Hotmail.com, PayPal, I'd appreciate any donations.
Yes, please send Hans donation. I mean, Hans and I have done, what, probably 30 shows together, and the amount of work that Hans and I have done together, you know, I mean, like, I spent like weeks at Princeton just going through files and crap, you know, and I need to get back out there again. But I mean, all of the research and stuff that we do takes a lot of time, and you know, it can be tedious, to say the least. Sorry, go ahead. I don't want to drag on here.
Yeah. So Easy Rider. So now we have, you know, again, I wanted to sort of concretize these processes so people can kind of get a handle on it. So Easy Rider is a great example, sort of the archetypal film. People think it's the archetypal, you know, the first countercultural movie made, and it's, you know, and all the songs within that movie, like, you know, Born to Be Wild, et cetera, these songs are associated with the images of this film, and you have, you know, the characters, Dennis Hopper, you know, Peter Fonda, da da da, you know. So the movie was extremely powerful, but not just as a film, but as part of this initiatory cycle, right? Where, and it's linking to all these different layers, which I'll try to get into. So Easy Rider is another example of a mass initiatory practice / programming. And again, to reiterate, this is cutting across multiple layers. It's not just an image. It's not just a lifestyle. It's not just a song. It's a whole intersection of all these different things, and it's all working together. It's operating as an entity within a field, right? So I'm trying to think of a good metaphor, but the idea is that it's not acting alone, but it's acting within a whole broader context. So it's linking, coding events, songs, lifestyles. It becomes an identification process, but also is recycled again and again and again as these images and everything associated with them. And this also, again, goes forward.
Hans.
Yeah.
I gotta just jump in and interject here. I just did a quick search on Born to Be Wild so I could play it. And the first one that came up was, ironically, you'll get a laugh out of this, Ozzy Osbourne and Miss Piggy.
Oh, my God. I had no idea that was done. So Ozzy Osbourne, is that in the Muppets, like in the 80s or something?
Yeah, let me see if I can.
I'm sorry to bother you.
That's probably not feeding in.
Piggy enough bothering
me. Let me stop the share.
Stick around together. Ozzy, chill. Just stick around, babe. We're going to rock the place down. Come on.
Oh, you're going to sing to me?
Yeah, me and you.
Talk about fitting the whole theme. I'm not going to play that because I don't want them to ding the show like they always do. I mean, the InQtel and Google and CIA, they're totally, they've got some algorithm to control how my search results show up and stuff now, so.
Yeah, well, that's wild, man, because that showed up. I mean, and that's, I don't think you could have come up with a better example of exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, that's introducing, you know, I used to watch the Muppet Show, you know, I mean, and so there's little
kids. I
love
that stuff as a kid. Yeah, that was like one of the few shows my parents would let me watch as a kid.
But now you've got a linkage between Easy Rider and which I'll talk about as an archetypal manipulation. An initiatory threshold that it's almost like it's a mass ritual cast on the entire culture, not just the film. That's the distinction. But there's Miss Piggy, and you're introducing people to Ozzy Osbourne. You're going back to the past, and then you're also moving to the future. And you got Ozzy, you know, biting the head off the bat, and then Ozzy having the Osbournes, you know, and
you're born to be wild, and you got to emulate Miss Piggy and Miley and Madonna and whatever age group. You know, who knows? I can't even keep up with the mind control crap they pump out now. You know, and since we're on to them, they've been cranking it out even faster.
Yeah, yeah. So, and this is, I mean, that it absolutely proves my point right there. Okay, that well, at least supports my point.
Right. But heavily.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was awesome that came up. I didn't even know that existed. I'll have to watch that. But, so anyways, so a part of this Easy Rider, the potency is archetypal manipulation. So you're looking at there's a whole bunch of elements drawn from, you know, communion ceremonies, from, you know, the hero's journey, from this really deep archetype of the hero, which is very important in terms of defining a culture and defining a society. And so there is a value to that. And so, but in a sense, this represents the hero's journey, but the hero's journey also could be have the adolescence, you know, I mean, the, you know, whatever, the young adults, the 60s counterculture as they're rebelling against society. But that mirrors that journey of all these people that were growing up in that time that were looking for, even for younger generations and older generations that were on either side of that divide, you know, what does it mean to really either be a man, to be a woman, to really be alive? What is the most important thing that can be done? Or who can I look up to? Who can I, you know, and so this whole archetype has a very deep resonance. But here we have, again, we have this morality inversion, subversion. So we have this law of reversal, which I already mentioned, satanic law of reversal. But what I think is really fun here is that, you know, and this is something that I actually thought was that, you know, this was like one of the first, you know, first shows that was, you know, one of the shows, I mean, movies that was done that was, you know, on this kind of psychedelic, you know, psychedelic countercultural movies. Well, that's absolutely not the case, which is really pretty fascinating because if any of you guys have done film or video stuff, you know, that you may, so I'm going to go to the end of this one. So I just want to give you a smattering of the films.
Oh God, you're going to make me vomit there.
Okay. So these are all movies from 1966, some even 1965, that are all based on psychedelic countercultural type of themes several years before Easy Rider. And now, if anyone, like I said, everyone's done film, you don't just, like, yeah, I could record a song and get a song out in maybe a couple of weeks, but to make a movie, there's a production team, there's script writing, there's a filming, and at this time, you had to actually process the film, physically edit the film, and then get it distributed. So you're not going to do that in 6 months. I mean, maybe, but usually, I mean, some films have taken 15 years to come out. 2 years, 2 to 5 years is kind of a normal time range. So these are all psychedelic, you know, movies based on LSD, psychedelia. Okay, go where you want to go, do what you want to do. It's going, if anyone gets in your way, kill them. So this is about a LSD crazed psychedelic biker who goes on a rampage, about made 4 years before Easy Rider. And we'll just go through some more of these. And there's a whole bunch more. LSD.
You know, what we need to do is just get a massive class action lawsuit against the CIA and Intel community for this crap. This is just ridiculous. You know, it's absolutely insane. Thanks, Anthony and Craig, for donating.
So, yeah, just to say, like, okay, So we're talking 1965, 1966. How many people were really deeply involved in LSD or even knew what the hell it was, right? Was it that big of a phenomena? So, okay, you have Summer of Love, you got all this, but I mean, so this is pre-hippie movement, pre-1960s, and somebody in the early 60s came up with all these movies. So we have 1965 or 66, LSD, Flesh of Devil. Then we have the Acid Eaters. Look at that. And this again,
and they, you know, each one of these has the devil right in it. They just put it right in your face there, you know, and it's all this licentious behavior. Everything is always about the degradation of society, promoting all the iniquity that they can.
Well, yeah. Actually, yeah,
you know, one thing I should mention is I figured out that, you know, iniquity and degraded behavior directly equals slavery. But that's a whole other subject.
Yeah. What I want to call your attention to, again, this is, you know, when this, you know, these films came out, you know, way before Easy Rider, people didn't know what LSD was, but this movie, The Acid Eaters, notice you have these cartoon images, right? So you have people that are watching cartoons, that subconscious identification with this stuff as a child. And then you have, so you actually have this inner reality. This is for whatever age range this is intended for, you know, or, you know, teenagers or early, you know, people in their 20s. So they're being reduced to these cartoon type of things, acid eaters. You know, this is, again, this is before, and there's all kinds of imagery. There's a Medusa, et cetera. Okay, tonight you're invited to a pill party, hallucination generation. So this is, again, before the whole counterculture broke, all these movies are coming out. You'll experience every inch of the psychedelic circus, da-da-da. Tonight you're invited to a pill party, okay? JC, Preach Love, Live Violence. So this is a movie, I think, from 67, where Jesus Christ is an LSD-addled hippie who becomes a Hell's Angel and starts murdering people. Really? So JC, you said anyone's?
So it's not Logos and Truth, it's hippies and, yeah, got it. It's always the inversion tactic, you know?
Yeah, I, again, just to remind people, I just want to bring this up, that this stuff was done. Now, I can see this stuff coming out later, right? When you've got the 60s movement is happening, oh, let's bring out a movie. This is before. This is precursor. This is before San Francisco. So that is extremely interesting. Okay, Who Are You, Polly Magoo? That's another, you know, LSD kind of sexploitation film. Wonderwall.
With the eye there.
it's
Up here at the top, there's an eye and the O there.
If you're 30, you're through. So this is a great movie where basically, so everyone over 30 dies. And so
what's that island in off the coast of Greece that doesn't allow anyone over the age of 25? Do you remember that?
No, I don't actually. Island of Lesbos?
No. You're a comedian. Shit. You know, when I used to live in Europe, there was a lot of talk of that place, but yeah, I mean, they didn't allow anyone on the island over 25. It was just like a sex and drug island.
So this is this movie, which is done, again, pre-1960s, drug-addled social revolution. This is the story of Max Powell, 24 years old, president of the United States, who created the world in his own image. To him, 30 is over the hill. 50% of America is under 25, and they've got the power. That's how he became president. So these hippies, taking LSD, basically massacre the entire ruling class and take over the country. And basically, if you're over 30, you get executed. Wild in the Streets, another heartwarming movie before Born to Be Wild. Alice in Acid Land, this is no fairy tale. Okay, again, I think I talked about last time I was on that.
People are saying my audio is echoing. I'm not sure what's going on there.
Okay, hopefully it's not.
Yeah, hopefully it's fixing it.
Okay, anyways, so this is no fairy tale, Alice in Acid Land, and then Microscopic Liquid Subway to Oblivion. Can you imagine the ride? I mean, so in the, you know, I gave you 50 more movies. This is before Grateful Dead came out, all this shit, you know. Okay, Psych Out. These are the pleasure eaters. Psych Out. I mean, look how this stuff was promoted Yeah, obviously low budget kind of drive-in schlocky movies, but you know, let's be honest.
And I mean, Aldous Huxley is sitting there, you know, directing the writing of all this crap. I'll bet you, you know, sitting there at that Laurel Canyon. You know, Aldous Huxley lived at the end of Mulholland Drive, which was right off of Laurel Canyon, like blocks away from there too.
Well, you know, I mean, he was a screenwriter. Do you know that?
Well, yeah, of course I know that. And, of course, I know that he was one of the key architects of MKUltra. So he's probably the one, you know, helping direct all of this crap as they're putting it out. I'd love to see, you know, who wrote all of these and their connections to, you know, who's who in the intel community. But that'd be a lot of work to go through that.
Well, because he did work as a screenwriter. I would absolutely not be surprised. So Eggshells, you know, another, you know, psychedelic movie.
But you want to get rid of the share screen if you're done?
Oh, yeah. You have the eggshells right there. You see that?
So I think it's the last one. You're showing the explosion when you don't have it shared. You've got your PowerPoint thing showing.
Okay. I'm showing like behind the scenes. Okay. I just got a couple more. Okay. Zoom. So this is like my big technology rebirth. I'm like, okay, we got it. Okay, Eggshells, you got that?
Got it. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. So this is another movie, and you know, I could spend hours going through how these show different types of programming. So now we have this, you know, this dissociative. This is exactly what Adorno is talking about, right? You join this mass culture. Go back to that thing you read about the rituals of ISIS, right? You're joining the frenzied, ecstatic, psychedelic ritual, but you're completely dissociated and you're living in this eggshell, this fantasy virtual bubble world. And that's what this movie is about, which is basically, you know, schizophrenic dissociation. And that is it for my movie clips. I'll just wrap up here. I think I'm not too far over. So, I'll just show some stuff from Easy Rider. But Jan, why don't you chime in there while I'm bringing that up, if you want to.
Oh, you know, I mean, it's all just wow. It's just even before the Grateful Dead. So they were, you know, Huxley was already utilizing, you know, film and all of that. And of course you have that CIA thing in the up in Laurel Canyon. Huxley's living like a block from there during the 50s, and you know, I've been past Huxley's house there. He also lived here on the next mountain ridge as well, back in the 40s, you know where, and he was like on the 66th parallel or something like that when I checked it out, but I forget exactly. It was pretty ridiculous. But yeah, this is just more understanding of how they're doing it, how they're constantly promoting this whole theme, and how they're doing it at, you know, how they reinforce it at different stages of your life to re-encourage it and to solidify it. So then if you have some memory thing, you'll go back and link back to that possibly as some... you have some affinity for it as a, you know, as a positive memory.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not just that. Let me, I know you don't like Joseph Campbell much, but this is a pretty...
He was CIA, worked on Changing Images of Man with SRI. He was working with Crowley, apparently, out of the Maverick in Woodstock, New York, too, writing all of his fake mythology and his hero's journey for them to invert Logos again, right?
Yeah, but so I would say that this quote, though, is correct. It has always been the prime function of mythology and right to supply the symbols that carry the human spirit forward in counteraction to those other constant human fantasies that tend to tie it back. In fact, it may well be that the very high incidence of neuroticism among ourselves follows from the decline among us of effective spiritual aid. And that's exactly what I'm saying, where these rites and rituals things are taken away, right? So we don't have these actual living ways in which, you know, we can connect ourselves to these broader thresholds. I'll just keep going. So this is about, you know, Carl Jung, archetypes of the living contents of the collective unconscious and are virtually unlimited number. Jung describes them as amorphous potentials, including future potentials, which emerge autonomously into a culture and are then expressed by individuals as myth or meaningful stories. They're always express their opposites as well. In fact, of point, archetypes always appear in quaternaries, masculine, feminine, positive, and negative. But the understanding of this archetypal level, right, that it's, you know, we see enough evidence to say, yeah, that's probably true. But again, it's suddenly being superimposed, and not only the entire social structure is imposed, but these deeper, it's being used as a springboard to access these deeper type of memories and maybe ancestral stuff. And really, again, especially with these very disturbing type of imagery and other things, it's creating almost like a wall inside the mind that allows this stuff to operate. Anyways, so this is another Jung quote: the collective unconscious, as far as we can say anything about it at all, appears to consist of mythological motifs or primordial images, for which reason the myths of all nations are its real exponents. Now let's look at Born to be Wild, right? Get your motor running, head out on the highway, looking for adventure in whatever comes our way. Yeah, got to go and make it happen. Take the world in a love embrace. Fire all of your guns at once and explode into space. So this is actually, that song is described in a symbolic way and in terms of the film in an actual way, describing sort of a process where, you know, a person would undertake, you know, the sort of the heroic journey, whether it's individuation to, you know, to really understand themselves, to, you know, to really do something of import in the world in relation to their space-time that they're in, their milieu. But so you're looking for adventure, whatever comes our way. So whatever comes our way, we're looking for adventure. We don't care. Yeah, got to go. I have to leave. I have to separation. So this is the separation stage of the initiation and make it happen. Take the world in a love embrace. Now this is, pull that apart a little bit. So this is almost like your, what is a love embrace? I mean, is it a sexual union with at the Wailing Wall with Lilith, the demonic spirit, or is this just some kind of Gandhian Buddhist love? And then fire all of your guns at once. So just blow yourself, blow your mind, do everything you can, and you explode into space. So you actually, instead of reaching the end of the mythological journey, you burn out and you know, you, as Jack Kerouac says, you're like a big Roman candle that blows up, and that's the best, that's the true hero, right? To just real briefly about the movie, so Wyatt, the character in the movie, he goes into the desert, right? So this is a procession into the unconscious. So this movie is an exact, so this is it, it, you know, it's it, just one other thing to say about it. It's very kind of hard to follow. It's done almost in a cut up, you know, we go back to Burroughs. It's done. So it's almost programming your subconscious. And if you're really stoned, if you're, you know, you just take an LSD, it's going to seem great, but this stuff is all going to resonate unconsciously unless you're very astute and perceive it that way. So anyways, he goes into the desert. So he's going into his own mind, right? So this is a journey into the mind, which is this inversion of heaven and earth, right? So the unconscious becomes the conscious, right? As John Lennon says, your outside is in, your inside is out. So you're actually perceiving the world, especially in the psychedelic sort of schizoid experience. You're perceiving the world through your unconscious. You're living in your unconscious, right, into this weird mythological realm. Okay, so he goes by the campfire. You're pulling inside. You're getting a little distance tonight. You're getting a little distance. So now we see that the highway, the easy rider highway journey, is actually a journey into the mind, actually into the, which should be the heart of the culture, right? Like a communion ceremony. So that no wholeness without all sides of the psyche. In his symbolic death, Wyatt appears unable either to escape the infantilism of the lure of the shadow or the mystery and power of the archives. He seems to have lost the treasure because he did not incorporate all the attributes into himself. And this is a song Wasn't Born to Follow. So even the song lyrics have this sort of mythical incantatory power. And when it's time, again, this is, I'm not going to say it, don't worry. And when it's time, I'll go and wait beside a legendary fountain till I see your form reflected in its clear and jeweled water. And if you think I'm ready, you may lead me to the chasm where the rivers of our vision flow into one another. So this is saying, if we go back to that thing from the 80s, self-control, that shadow figure, right? That second being appears. So instead of a journey into the wholeness or reintegration, you're being led, you're opening up to these other sort of entities or other parts of yourself or other parts of the society that are taking you to this destruction. And in fact, the hero of this movie, they're showing it right in your face that he does not successfully make this transformation. He ends up dead. So religious symbolism. So lots of religious symbolism, lots of things with communal religious, like a Christ type of figure, the failure of the hero. So the hero never returns. The hero has to return to the world. The hero goes on this journey, can't quite make it, and blows his mind out, right? He just blows up and he has a psychedelic journey, and then this other weird shadow figure, like, you know, again, like we see in all these occult Illuminati music videos, that's what they're showing. This shadow figure takes over the personality, or that, you know, you basically fracture, you become lost, you do not cross over. It's also manipulation of temporality, which I'll kind of skim over here, but it's quite interesting also. And the movie does use a cut up type of time sequence, but just notice how this Easy Rider, maybe not as much this year, but the 60s stuff is constantly recycled. This mythology is constantly rammed down our throats. And in fact, it's so much embedded in our culture that we almost can't escape it. So encoding of archetypal symbols with music. All this stuff, especially, I mean, now if you watch the movie again, I'm sure we'll pick it up, but mostly people watch it, they're just thinking these guys are just really stoned and made this weird movie and it's okay and I like the songs, but you're not even aware of what it's doing to you. It transcends the rational mind and writes on the subconscious. And then this is the last Carl Jung quote. This widened consciousness is no longer that touchy, egotistical bundle of personal wishes, fears, and hopes and ambitions, which always had to be compensated or corrected by unconscious counter tendencies. Instead, it is a function of relationship to the world of objects, bringing the individual into absolute binding and indissoluble communion with the world at large. So what we have there is the actually completed heroic journey, not the the heroic journey of the fool's errand of the idiot Peter Fonda and whatever, all whacked out on LSD. But notice they're doing it right there. This is this archetypal movie of freedom, love. But they say right there, fire all your guns at once, explode into space. Go ahead. Open up your mind, fracture your personality, be controlled by external demonic entities, almost reach the threshold and screw up and become, but that's the hero. The hero is this failure. Sure, you're not. And that's an insight I had, is that what you need to do is see reality clearly, not see it through, your psychedelic distortions. That's the opposite of what you should do.
So what it is, it's an exact inversion of the hero via logos.
Yeah, an exact inversion.
So we'll have to go into that topic at another time. That's a huge thing to get into as well that we've been researching. Yeah, somebody says tortured soulster, and I feel you because I was one too. He says, I have been a Tool fan, but now I feel like a tool for liking anything. I had seen Tool in A Perfect Circle and all of that a bunch of times, and Hans and I have exposed the entire pop music industry, and it goes all the way back. You can tell even from the 40s, but they've been pushing this, and Hans and I went back to Harry Smith that was putting all that stuff out way back. And they're always just getting us caught into it. So it's just, you got to come to terms with it. You know, laugh it off. They got me. And you know, next time you'll be more the wiser when they try to dupe you. And just, you know, use the trivium. Look for the patterns. You know, think for yourself. Check citations. Don't believe things because, you know, somebody tells you you should. You know, whether it's the trans QWERTY agenda or the, you know, whatever transhumanist agenda, all of it, it's all crap that they're peddling from the left-hand path.
Yeah, well, you know, what I did want to, I'm going a little bit of a different direction because, you know, the stress that, you know, you can have, you know, we can analyze it, right? But just to see how this stuff started from childhood. Right. This started from, you know, and you grew up here, you know, unless, you know, you were raised on, you know, some, you know, certain people weren't, but most of us are exposed to this stuff. And
all of us pretty much were given Sesame Street crap. And we got to see, you know, the Croft stars and all that stuff growing up. Right. The Sim and the Sea Monster and whatever else.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that I would describe as sort of there's an, you know, that mirror level of the consciousness is actually, you know, like the garbage pail kids, this sort of internal, I had some other stuff about, you know, the child starts giving instructions to themselves. So there's this internal like firewall, right? That keeps us sort of, you know, obviously when you free yourself intellectually, then you have to sort of go through and pull, you know, sort of, I say free your spirit, right? Just take some of the stuff because it does have impacts. I mean, certainly you don't say, oh, you know, you shouldn't feel like a tool. I mean, it's kind of like, this is even your liking of that band may have been pre-programmed, you know, from when you're 5 years old. So I think part of it is, I think the level of consciousness is really where this battle is being waged. And so this is maybe the more deeper kind of psychological level of unwinding it. But I think that as we unwind it, I think that we're going to have massive shifts that are going to really take off. Cause it's this stuff that allows the stuff that's on the surface, like all the surveillance, the, you know, we could just go on and on about our insane society. This stuff would never have been possible even 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Some of the stuff is happening. Absolutely unthinkable. Why is it possible? Because of this erosion. But the erosion happens, you know, again, we have been thrown into this mass control mind control matrix that creates traumatic impulses it's maybe you could call it MK Ultra Light. Right. It's like instead of, you know, drinking Lafroig whiskey, I'm going to have a wine cooler. But if I drink enough wine coolers, I'll still get a buzz from that.
You just had to bring up Lafroig, huh?
Yeah, I'm not drinking.
That's pretty good stuff.
Yeah. Well, but anyways, this is, you know, like I said, this is a super interesting topic. It's been kind of fun to do this. And I have to watch the Miss Piggy and Ozzy Osbourne, but you know, I would throw that out to the listeners too. I mean, just take one song and just, you can start tracing these imageries, and we could have spent even an hour on just some of those single pictures, but then they all tie together. So just notice how it's this almost like this crystal palace of all this resonant stuff, which shows that, but the thing is, once you wake up, especially once you clarify your mind and heart and body, then you can share it. And that's the thing. It is fragile, but it's also very powerful. And ultimately behind that just comes the fist of the state. Right. But then the state, you can't kill 5 billion people if they get their heads out of their asses.
Yeah. Well, no kidding. And you know, like Aldous Huxley said, they wanted to get people to love their servitude. And that's exactly what we see. You think, you know, you get kids thinking that freedom is about, you know, being out high and shaking your titties in public, and that's you know, that's the extent of it. They're so removed from everything, you know, they're so caught up into the lie and the schemes, they can't even fathom that somebody like Leary or Terrence McKenna et al. are dirty. We're CIA and all of these guys, you know, the whole music and video industry, and it's like, well, they can't be all dirty. Well, you know, maybe not every one of them is aware, but certainly a very large number of them are in on it. And you do have those like Beyonce, who are probably monarch victims controlled likely by Jay-Z and these others, you know, not every one of them is aware of it, but certainly too many. Britney Spears went crazy when she started to figure out everything. Kanye West clearly started to piece it together, and they locked him up last year. You know, a lot of these people do figure it out, and you know, it's just, you know, as soon as they figure it out, they whisk them off and lock them into a mental hospital and you know, tell them that they were crazy.
No, absolutely. And this, that's one of the things is, you know, I have to do, I'm really trying to piece this together, but part of it is that people resist it, right? Some people, they get so angry. Dude, Jerry's, you can't say that about Jerry. Jerry's like, Jerry's, you know, like they,
he's a god,
or, you know, even like Aldous Huxley, whatever. I mean, and there's other issues that people respond to even more strongly, but it's part of that. I think, again, is I think whatever, however this is engineered, there's that reflexive thing where you can, as soon as you realize that this person is lying, you suddenly, you have to like face yourself and face, man, all that programming that has happened to you. But it's like, that's like the, you know, it's almost like not a self-destruct mechanism. It's almost like an inner protective mechanism built into the programming. And the more they react strongly means the deeper that they're programmed. And, you know, and the more they defend the person means the more they're programmed by that person or event or whatever. And it becomes hard because I think that their identities are so much identified just with the programming that if they were to lose that programming, and you know what, they may indeed go mad. You know, who knows? I mean, they may end up like that guy Pogo in that kids show or something, you know, dancing around with dragons.
Yeah. But, Hans, we'll have to have you back on again soon. You always have great information. You're by far the most popular guest with 30-some shows under your belt now, and I always appreciate your work. We need to get together someday and do some research, go over some of the new discoveries we found that we haven't made public yet. There's a lot more to come, and revolves around Tartary and some other discoveries that have been made that I've kind of briefly mentioned to you, but I think you're going to be floored when you see it. Ladies and gentlemen in the audience, thanks for the donations and support tonight. There's probably about $100 worth of donations. Hopefully you supported Hans too. That, you know, we need to make at least that to just cover the bills each day and help do all of the research and everything. So thanks for that. Thanks for supporting Hans as well. I need to go get some dinner. Hopefully somebody will make a nice donation so I can go get some tacos downtown and not worry about cooking tonight. I hate cooking after I'm tired after I do the show. So, yeah,
I'm glad you called me, Jan. We're color matching.
I don't know.
We're both wearing blue and white. So that's no, fine. Jan didn't tell me what he was wearing, but, yeah, no, Jan, thank you so much for having me on. It's always, nice to kind of dive into this stuff and, appreciate the exposure and the format. Cause probably I would never even have really publicized any of this work just because I'm too lazy or just I'm not that motivated, whatever.
Yeah, well, you and I have known each other for a long time. What, 6-8 years now, I guess. 2009, I think we started talking, right? That's,
yeah, I think when you first did the
9 years.
Started. Yeah, and I had that. I was coming back from the mountains of northeast India,
yeah.
The Himalayan foothills, and you probably want to say that was the show we were pretty.
Yeah, well, yeah. Just think back all the way to the first. What was that, episode 99 or something like that of the Gnostic Media podcast? So, I mean, that was like, wow. You know, we've gone a long way since then. And you know, you and I were both pretty much caught into the whole system back then. You know, 9 years ago, we were pretty well caught into the whole thing. And I remember, you know, we both believed in all of this, you know, all of this leftist Marxist stuff and the psychedelic stuff, all of it, we were caught in it back then. And now it's like we've done a 180, come out, expose it all. Somebody was attacking me the other day. Well, you promoted those people, so you're dirty. It's like, well, you know, it's a process of waking up, and we've tried to show who was dirty along the way every time we figured it out. So, and thanks, Anthony, for donating for dinner tonight right there. I really appreciate that. Somebody says tacos are dirty. But anyway.
Yeah. Not as dirty as Beyonce, man. You'd have to pay me to spend a night with her. No.
Oh, boy. Wow. Yeah. You'd come away, you know, needing some Ajax on your Johnson there.
Oh, right. Boy.
Anyway, with that note, anyway, I think that's a good ending point.
I think so.
Take that out of your children's ears. Sorry about that, folks. We're talking about all this iniquity and degradation, and I tossed that out anyway. All right, so good night, Hans. Good night, everyone. See you next week. And until then, Hans, any last final statements for the night? Yeah, any last words?
No, it was a real, real pleasure to do this. And just saying that, you know, I to come out of this after the intellectual understanding is there is very liberating. It does take the humility to say, wait, there's no way this stuff is affecting me. I was never conditioned. No, I guarantee that
you have to be very humble to admit that you were wrong and duped and fooled. And then even to come out and say it, much less expose it when you discover it, you know, it takes a lot of integrity and honesty.
Yeah. I think that, you know, it goes, you have to, at a certain point, you do have to go kind of a inner center, but also a connectivity with the world, with nature, community and stuff. And I think that ultimately it is kind of like a spiritual journey. Once you get through and knock all this stuff out of your mind and reintegrate yourself, then you're far more powerful. You feel so much better and you're actually able to effectively act in the world and also even see the world around you. So that's
absolutely,
I just hope people wake up. So
yeah.
Anyways, yeah.
Coming to Logos is one of the most satisfying, revealing, calming things that one can go through and understand. So I'll leave it at there. Good night, everyone.
All right. Good night, Jan. Take care, man.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.